Today, I'm going to have a series of short little caught red-handed. The first one, I was engaged, and my goal was to stay a good moral girl. But we would have hot and heavy making out sessions. So my parents had this large home, and they would all be in the living room watching television. And then there's a little kind of corridor where they had trophies, and then a sliding accordion-type door and a large family room. And so we used that for our makeout sessions. And we thought it was pretty safe because you could hear the sliding door open, and that would give us plenty enough time, I thought. Well, I was wrong. And my mother opened the door and caught me, and I grabbed my blouse and held it in front of me, and she was so disappointed in me. I still stayed a good moral girl, but, you know, my image was really pretty well destroyed. And so she told us how disappointed she was. And I said, well, he was just giving me a massage. So after that, my younger sisters always came in and decided to practice piano. And we'd get so mad at her. And she says, finally, well, she makes me. She doesn't let me practice earlier. She makes me wait till you both are in there. So then we moved to a car and just steamed up all the windows instead. So then fast forward quite a few years, well, just a few years, and I had a little 3-year-old and a 4-year-old. And someone gave me a box of chocolates. And when I opened it, brand new box of chocolate, up every piece of candy, every single piece, was these two little tooth marks going up the side, across the top, and down the side. Every single piece. And so you don't ever do it the way I did. I called them both up and never do this. But I said, which one of you did this? And naturally, self-defense kicks in, and they both denied being the guilty culprit. And I thought and thought and thought. And they both acted so innocent. I couldn't tell by their demeanor or their facial expressions. And then I looked at both their teeth and the tooth marks. And I figured it must be my daughter, the 3-and-a-half-year-old. So then I waited a while until maybe the next day. And I said, Lori, when did you do that to the candy? And so then she just burst into tears and told me when. And so since she confessed, you know, I forgave her, of course. And then, so fast forward again, and now I'm working at the prison. And I explained that I never thought I'd want to be a correctional officer, but my goal was to be a correctional counselor, and I was going to achieve the goal faster by combining work experience with education. So here I was working at one of the first women correctional officers in a men's prison. So part of our duties is to catch them red-handed, doing something they're not supposed to do. So in the visiting room, we have large enclosed ones, and I used to dread working the visiting room because I'd be very sympathetic to the nice inmates, and there they were with their girlfriend or their wife, and they are giving these lingering goodbye kisses. And I really felt for them. So I hated to be the one to tell them, you know, they had to break it up and keep going. But then there's another bunch of inmates that I'm not sympathetic with because they have no respect for the women that they have come visit them. And I don't have much patience with them. So here, instead of in this big visiting room, this one day, there was an overflow. So this is a very large area, and there's lots of traffic. Officers are walking right through to go to control to pick up their assignment and their keys. And the inmates were crowded in this room, and people were walking around. And it's closer than I am to the first row. It's like the first row, if it was turned around facing the second row. That's how close they were seated. And here it was like 80 degrees in this visiting room. And this one lady has a black wool coat over her lap. So I asked her to remove it. And she kind of, and didn't do anything. So I asked her again really nicely to remove her coat. And again, she wouldn't. And so I had to get very authoritative and demand that she removed her coat. And remember, there's people right across from her, very close. There's kids walking back and forth. I mean, this some of the our nice families trying to have a good visit. So finally she removed her coat, and there was her dress all the way above her waist and no undergarments. So she was definitely caught red-handed. So then another assignment, I really liked working with the inmates in the dorms or out in the yard or different places. And I hated working Tower 1, which is the entrance building. And thank God it's changed quite a bit. But in those days, the inmates were allowed to sit at tables where they could visit nicely. They could walk up and down the walks and back and forth. Then there's the wire fence, and I'm up above monitoring them and the people coming and going. So I was looking around, and oh, no. We call them players, guys that are always rebellious, trying to get away with as much as they can. And we knew that this couple had to be watched carefully because they were always going beyond the boundaries. So there he was, sitting to the side, thinking I wouldn't look because it was a difficult area to spot. There he was, sitting on top of this fire hydrant, and she was straddled with a skirt on. And I used my binoculars. Yeah, I knew she wouldn't have hose on. So then I figured she didn't have anything else on underneath that skirt. So I called the sergeant and said, you know, so-and-so's out there with a girl on the fire hydrant. Could you please go out and, remove them? So I waited, and oh, no. So I called him again, please, hurry. And he still didn't come. And I called a third time, will you hurry? They're bouncing now. So he came out, and then they broke apart, and he zipped up, and so they got written up. And so that's the end of my stories.